Welcome back. You're here with David Faisal on 770 CHQR. In More Than Money, we're joined by David Perry, President, Canadian Global Affairs Institute. We're going to continue our conversation about this most recent Russian-Ukraine conflict. David, we left off to the break setting up sort of where we're at today. There's been an escalation. It looks like it's going to get uglier and messier, as you said. I'm interested now to switch gears a little bit and get your take on what are the various paths forward here and what can we expect?
I think at this point, unfortunately, the various paths forward, all the options look bad, and what's impossible routes to de-escalate this are still murky at this point in time. I think, you know, despite what seems, I think there's legitimately been a much more meaningful than expected ability on the Ukrainians' parts to put up a good fight here, but the math is working against them. The Russians have a lot more forces. They have a lot of air power. They have a lot of long-range missiles that they haven't actually used to nearly as much as they could to this point in time, but it looks like increasingly in the last 3 or 4 days they're starting to. And so the distribution of the Ukrainian forces across their entire country is going to become increasingly tenuous, I think, because despite what I think has been a very sophisticated information campaign on the part of the Ukrainians, highlighting their localized tactical successes in different places. Unfortunately, if you look at the maps that people are putting up about the locations of Russian forces, particularly in the south and the southeast, the lines that the Russians, the Ukrainian territory the Russians are moving for through keeps expanding. They stalled a little bit around the capital, north of the capital in Kyiv. They've encircled other cities, and they're taking now, it looks almost as if they've completed a strip of land which would connect Crimea to Russia, which would be a significant strategic advantage for the Russians. That's a key piece of real estate on the Black Sea, and if you can connect it by land to Russia, that would be a success for the Russians. The whole West, NATO countries in particular, is just looking to flood Ukraine with arms. We'll see how much of that can actually get in and get used. But I think if that's successful, it's shaping up to a situation where the Russians are going to be dragged into a longer-term fight, which is unfortunately going to inflict a lot of civilian casualties. I think we'll have to watch over the next couple of weeks exactly how much pressure can build up in Russia itself, because if you were sitting in the Kremlin right now, I think unfortunately the scenarios from their vantage point would look at grinding this out and winning in Ukraine or swinging from the end of a rope. I'm not clear at this point what other kind of avenues are open to the Russian regime at the moment.
David, there's a lot of change happening economically and in the trade of goods. So we're talking fertilizer, grain, potentially oil shipments and so forth. All those three areas sound like something that Canada's pretty good at. We have a lot of. We could share it with the world. Now, I know we have a problem with this with the oil side because we were kind of missing a few pipelines that we could have used for this situation. How does Canada play a role on the economic side? And again, I'm not saying that that this is a place for opportunity, but sometimes in conflict rises opportunity. And this is an opportunity for us to take some more global market share. Where does Canada fit in this? And is it possible that we're going to get more market share than we've had before this conflict started?
I would hope so. I mean, to your point, I think as a country, we've been incredibly short-sighted to prohibit our energy resources from reaching global markets to the fullest extent that they could, because, Canadian natural gas could sure come in handy right now in parts of Europe, either just to replace the interrupted supply come up through this and the cancellation of the permitting process on Nord Stream 2, but you know the Germans are still getting Russian gas, and at least on my read of the economic measures, the one aspect of Russian economic activity that's still open is their oil and gas exports, because the world needs it. But you know, certainly there's ways to supply this elsewhere. I wonder whether or not there's a potential to use some of the existing infrastructure that reaches into the U.S. and use their export terminals as an example. You know, have Canadian gas get supplied into the American market and use American export facilities. There's projects underway certainly to get more of Canada's energy to world markets. I don't think though that any of those you folks would likely know better on this, but that stuff's not ready to turn on next Monday, unfortunately. But boy, if you get in a time machine and better position this country, there'd sure be a way to help in a concrete way if we had made some better choices a few years ago.
David, to the extent that you can comment on this, I know you're not an economist, but it sure seems quite evident that there's a military war happening in Ukraine and Russia. The rest of the world seems to be waging an economic war for the most part at this point. And it seems to be escalating as well. Maybe talk to us a little bit about what we might expect to see from a global economic perspective to the extent that you can, given the options in front of the, you know, the rest of the world, if we're not going to take it on a military level.
So I mean, I think the energy piece is key. I mean, Russia is a consequential contributor to global energy markets. Like I said, that's the remaining piece of their economy that still seems to be largely functional, although I recognize there's a bunch of the banking instruments are going to make some of the transactions there more complicated. If we go after that, then you have to be able to take up that supply somewhere else. But as we're already seeing right now, the price of the pumps where I'm at in Ottawa is crazy in the last week and a bit to see the change in the prices. So that's going to have a flow through impact across markets. Ukraine's also a fairly meaningful producer of a number of key commodities, fertilizer, some grains as an example. So, you know, I don't think anybody at this point can expect that the Ukrainian output of anything at the moment is going to be anything close to what it was, you know, 2-3 months ago. So picking up, taking over from those impacts on the world economy is going to be consequential. And then we're going to need to think more broadly about how what's at last count that I saw already 1 million displaced people that have fled Ukraine, and a number that's going to grow even further. And then the last piece would be, even if this conflict were to end by the time that we wrap this discussion, there's going to be tens of billions of dollars worth of reconstruction that's going to be needed in Ukraine just to fix the devastation that's been created to date. So big time disruptions to try and unwind in the years ahead.
David, if we've got about 1.5 minutes left before we have to go to commercial break. If you're sitting in the Prime Minister's chair right now, top three things you would do with this whole conflict going on, what would you do?
One, I'd look to try and make to step up the humanitarian commitment. We've had situations the last 10-20 years where there's lots of there's lots of good Canada can do in the world from a humanitarian point of view. Given the sheer scope of the interpersonal connections between Ukrainian Canadians in that country, I think there's a lot more that we could do in terms of helping those people that have fled. I think the second thing that we should really look at is reevaluating, as we said, our position in the global energy market. I think this has highlighted the fact that there's definitely a demand to have more secure from all kinds of perspective sources of energy on the international market, something that Canada could tap. And I think the last thing, Canada needs to reevaluate our approach to international affairs and defense. I think we're seeing right now a number of the shortcomings in some of our assumptions, which had basically never assumed that the Russians were going to do anything like this on this scale.
David, I want to thank you very much for taking some time with us today. We appreciate your insights.
Good to talk to you.
We've been joined by David Perry, President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute. This is an evolving situation, my friend. I mean, we're going to have to keep on top of this over the coming weeks. And it looks pretty bad right now, doesn't it?
You know, when you're sitting on the other side of this conversation with David, you hear a whole bunch of potential issues. If you're listening to the show and you're worried about your future and your retirement and how your portfolio will be looking at, you can be prepared for a whole bunch of concern and issues. And there's these superpowers we talk about in our strategy called structure and discipline. And what is that structure? What is that discipline? We've gone through conflict in the past and we've been able to weather the storm in our portfolio structure, in our retirement strategies. And so we're going to talk about that solution at our upcoming seminar on Tuesday, March 29, 7 p.m., live online. You need to register for this. So go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
All right, stick around after the break, and we're going to talk about the secret of your success in your portfolio and your investment management. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.